there's a lot more punks than there was 4 years earlier, but there's also as many posers. Posers were people that looked like punks, but they did it for fashion.
Welcome to SLC Punks, a Utah Jazz podcast brought to you by the staff of SLC Dunk. Now here's your hosts, Michael Lohman and James Hansen.
All right, welcome back to the SLC Punks podcast. This is your host, James Hansen, also known as Hansen James on Twitter.
And this is Milo.
And Milo, it's another week for the Utah Jazz. Things have been looking really, really good for the Utah Jazz. Before we started, I just want to read, I want to talk about our sponsor, sportsbettingdime.com. This week's podcast is brought to you by sportsbettingdime.com. Be sure to check out their Utah Jazz page for up-to-date stats and insights. This week, the Jazz have been playing much, much better. If you go to Sports Betting Dime and the Utah Jazz page, which we'll link in the description of this episode, and on SLC Dunk, you can go and read up about the Utah Jazz. The cool thing, Milo, about last week is that I think Sports Betting Dime broke some news that nobody knew about. They had the Howell Neto news. That he was injured, and no one else had even talked about that. I didn't see it reported by any.
Pulled that up on the podcast, and we're like, "I'm not sure about that."
Yeah, and then lo and behold, a game later, Howell Neto was out. So, Sports Betting Dime, guys, go check it out. The link is in the podcast, and also on SLC Dunk. Make sure you're going to SLC Dunk and reading all the articles, and you might find some things that you didn't know. Today, we are joined by one of our favorite people on Jazz Twitter and in Bleacher Report and also the mayor of Exum Island. We're joined by Andy Bailey. Thank you for joining us, Andy.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's an honor and privilege to have that title of mayor of Exum Island because you both have strong claims to it yourselves.
Well, I claimed Postmaster General is what I'd like to be known as.
You saw the clip of the Postmaster General that I sent to you, right?
I did. I appreciated that very much. If you can't use a GIF that isn't either Seinfeld or what's the Larry David show on HBO? I'm a
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
There you go. I'm a bad fan. If it's not one of those GIFs, then it's really not worth using sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of see myself as a traitor. I mean, I go back and forth between the mainland and then basically, I take things from the mainland, I mark it up really high, and I sell it on Exum Island, return back with profits, and then come back. And then when it is convenient, I will talk crap about Exum Island because they're not there. And then I come back and I'm like, hey, I'm for you guys. So
this is a very bold thing to bring up at the town council meeting of Exum Island.
I know. I'm kind of just putting myself out there. Like, what are you going to do? You're closed. So
town council meeting has always got very up and down attendance. Sometimes town council meeting, and sometimes town council meeting at Exum Island gets very heated. You know,
I mean, Exum Island is currently in a shutdown.
Yeah, so exactly, it is shut down right now. Pretty more much. And, go ahead.
More renovations.
More exactly. Renovations.
So you know what? The foundation in our town hall cracked a little bit. This week, guys, before we get into that, I wanted to talk about the last game for the Utah Jazz. And we've seen some incredible things from Utah the last week or two. But probably more than anything, it was Joe Ingles blowing a kiss to a fan in the front row. And it turns out that was a Laker fan.
It was a Laker fan? Is that what it was?
Yeah, if you follow 5Kale, he actually he zoomed in on who it was. And actually, it's just an amazing photo because this fan looks like he's in utter agony as Joe Ingles is blowing a kiss of death to him. But on his chest is a Lakers lanyard. First off, I don't know how many people wears lanyards, but also a Lakers lanyard. And it's just the best to have Joe
Ingles
on the
Jazz. That is two levels where you're like, you know what? I'm cool enough to wear a lanyard. And around his neck, it's not like out of his pockets, like around his neck.
It's around his neck. He's a proud Lakers fan. So yeah, go to @5KL, Chris, former basketball John, founder of SLC Dunk. But anyways, it's a wonderful picture. And Joe Ingles is a treasure that all Jazz fans Just you can never appreciate Joe Ingles too much, I think.
The dude has a jazz lanyard on too. He went double lanyard.
He deserves to just get talked trash to the entire game just for that alone. Like, it's like, dude, you obviously like lanyards. You really like lanyards. Like, you're there. Does it still have like the keys around him? Because at that point, I just don't know what to think about this guy. Where is he, a programmer? Is he really wealthy? Like, because I feel like if you're rich, then all of a sudden you stop worrying about style because you're like, I'm rich. And nobody can make fun of you. You can't make fun of like a rich guy with a fanny pack because you're like, F you, you're poor.
Well, I think Joe Ingles giving you a kiss after hitting, getting a kiss from Joe Ingles after a game winning, you know, it put the Pistons to bed basically. And then getting a kiss of death is basically means you have to delete your account. But, you know, he's at a game. So I guess he deletes his season tickets or something.
I'm really disappointed because I made a video that I thought was going to take off more. I giggled the entire way through it by putting Seal's Kiss of a Rose to that in slow motion. And it only got like 100 RTs, and I was like, people don't know art.
I might not have seen that.
I didn't get any love for it. It took off on Facebook, and then all of a sudden I had a crisis of faith. I'm like, am I Facebook funny but not Twitter funny?
Well, here's
which
the thing.
Which is a completely other ball game. Because I'm
here's
not
one
ready
thing
for
I
that.
Know. I will put in, I've only had one video where I've put we might see a secret video come out this year at some point, but I used to do those animated videos. And I will put in literally 3 months of work into a video and get like a certain amount of social media buzz from it. And then I'll put 5 minutes into a YouTube video or just like a whatever and get 3 times the attention. And so I don't know. That's just how it works sometimes.
Media is so annoying. It's like there's no way to predict what works and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and culture. I feel like it's that way when you write articles. The more time you write in there, like the more of a like dick comment you're going to get, like the very first one. Like you might spend like 3 months of research into something, put blood, sweat, and tears, and the very first comment is going to be like, comma splice for first paragraph, and you're like, thanks.
or you'll have
cool
a typo
fan,
in the
3-2-1. Really appreciate it. Blood, sweat, and tears here.
Yeah.
Just had to know like advanced calculus to figure out these and create my own metric, but hey, you know, thanks for the comma splice versus you're like, hey, look at Joe Ingles blowing a kiss, and people are like, oh my gosh, this is the best article I've ever read. This is amazing. These people really know their stuff. This is why I always come here. I don't understand it.
Well,
never understood it.
It's been a bittersweet week for Jazz fans, both on Twitter and watching the Jazz, because the Jazz are, I think they're 4-1 of their last 5. I could be wrong. You surely will let me know in the comments, guys. But one thing that did come out today that a little bit of a bummer is the Utah Jazz injury update. I was actually surprised because we hadn't really heard anything about Dante Exum, so I kind of had hopes that he might be, and I don't know who I had read, but it sounded like he might be back sooner than later. Turns out it's going to be later, 2 weeks for Dante Exum, but I believe that Ricky Rubio and is it Tabo,
and Neto
are getting evaluated in a week or something like that. I think I may be wrong. But
I like how they use reevaluated. Like they're like, we'll think about it.
It's yeah, I don't
not like I, estimated. Like, is that just their doctor's appointment? Where it's just like, we're going to go there. Then we'll estimate and then we'll do this. So well, it's not even guaranteed that they'll be back within a week. It's like that could be the soonest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that they get evaluated in a week and Exum in 2 weeks. It's obvious that Exum's injury is going to be a little bit longer.
Like his ankle is still the size of a grapefruit.
Yeah. Oh, but
that was a bummer to see that report for sure.
It's funny because like the Jazz have been winning with these injuries, but at the same time, it's just a bummer. I will just be honest. I was very excited to see Dante Exum get a chance to possibly start. And now I don't get to see that. And I don't know when that's going to happen. And it makes me I honestly lose sleep about it. Maybe that makes me a crazy person, but I was really bummed. But oh well, they will come back and the Jazz are winning. Do you think so? The Jazz have three games coming up, two against higher caliber teams and one against the Cleveland Cavaliers. How are these injuries going to affect the Jazz? Are they going to still be able to keep winning games like they've been doing? Or are they going to, is it finally going to catch up to them? What do you guys think?
This next one coming up is the Clippers, and I think it's in LA, right?
Yeah, I think that's where, if I were a betting man, that's where the win streak ends right there.
Yeah, the Clippers are, they're tough this season, and they're deep. And that's, you know, that's obviously a big problem with a team that's missing four guys, like, or, yeah, four guys, like the Jazz
four
are.
Four guys, I mean, and all the point guards.
Yeah, exactly. Against a team that's, I think, in a lot of games, their bench is better than their starters. Harrell's been
amazing.
One of their two or three best players all season long. I think Pat Beverly's coming off the bench for them now. They got a lot of strong guys coming off the bench. So when the game gets towards the end of the first and third quarters, it's going to be real dicey. Basically, whenever Rudy and Donovan aren't on the floor in this one, it's going to be sort of hold on to your butts time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the hard thing about having all the point guards out. If this was like, say, four players spread out, you still have people in their roles, but just playing more minutes. I mean, there's going to be a bit more pressure, but it's not like they're having to think completely differently when they're on the court. Like, much has been said about Jay Crowder's struggles, but he's having to be a playmaker right now. He's having to run the offense in some sets, which he hasn't been doing at all this year. He's been a spot-up shooter. Joe Ingles is not the secondary playmaker. He's a primary playmaker a lot of the time during this, and that's okay. But then all of a sudden, when you go to the secondary, and you're like, okay, Royce, it's your show. And we saw early in the season that Royce really struggled. Did Royce end up – I can't remember. Did Royce end up shooting a field goal the last game? Because I remember looking at 26 minutes in, and he hadn't shot the ball once.
It was – I was going to say – well, Royce has been someone that I was actually – I've been surprised this year how Royce has not played as well as I thought he would. He's actually been pretty rough at times this season, where it just feels like he's trying to really go beyond what he's capable of doing. I like Royce as like a spot up shooter, and I do think that he has times where he's a good defender, but for whatever reason this season he's just looked so frenetic, and he turns the ball over, and that's what's been tough about this situation, is that, you know, it's not that Donovan and Joe and Rudy aren't a good starting unit, because they're proving to be a really nice starting unit still. Even with Royce and O'Neal in there, it's like you said, it's like that second unit's in there, and you're really depending on players like Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal, and you're just like, it's really, like you said, hold on to your butts. I don't know what's going to happen. Luckily against the Pistons, Grayson hit a couple threes and actually had a few fun moments. Like he had that block at the rim, but Royce didn't. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, you're right. He showed flashes in that game. I remember when he checked in that one, I just thought, here we go. And there's moments, there's moments, and sometimes prolonged moments, where he just doesn't even look like an NBA player. But it was really encouraging, a couple of the things that he did in that game. He's got a lot longer way to go than I thought coming into the season.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's a worrying thing with Grayson. He's a 4-year player, and by a 4-year player out of college, you're expecting a lot more production or just readiness, NBA readiness, and it's not there. And at that point, you're like, okay, well, how much development do you want to put into a 23, 24, 25, 26-year-old player at that point? You know, how is this going to pay off for us as in our investment? And as of right now, like what I see from Grayson is just like, I see flashes, but I see flashes from in a way that I think like Portland Trailblazers fans see flashes out of Anthony Simmons. And that shouldn't be the case with somebody who like like Grayson. And
Simon, like 19 years old.
Yeah, and his body, like Donovan Mitchell, when he came into the NBA, he looked like he had an NBA body. He wasn't getting pushed around. Grayson Allen looks like he has a college body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like he's getting pushed around. He looks like rookie season John Stockton. He looks scrawny out there, and he's just getting pushed around. And when that bench unit comes in, that, I mean, it's really like the Salt Lake City Stars, because you have Royce out there, you have Grayson out there. I mean, if the wrong things happen, you have Tony Bradley out there. You have George Niang out there. It's,
oh, can I say one thing?
And Nas. You might even have Nas out there if things. But even then, like I when I wrote the article about, oh, hey, here's the Jazz's options when everybody was hurt, even Grayson Allen, I was like, well, I guess we're gonna see a lot of Nas Mitrulong. At least we're gonna see, you know, at least 15 minutes. And nope, they did not even touch him. They didn't even look his direction. They're like, we're hurting, but we're not hurting that bad.
I have to say, though, one of the silver linings of all this is we have been able to get a look at some things that I think a lot of Jazz fans wanted. I think number one is Donovan Mitchell is playing point guard and running the show, and it looks good. I think part of it is that he's actually hitting shots. Like before, Donovan Mitchell, it just honestly, for the first third of this year, it just felt like he couldn't hit a three, you know, and that just like, I don't know why all of a sudden he's hitting those threes, if it's just confidence. I don't know if he was dealing with some sort of injury.
It looks like he has more arc on his shot,
but
like it his shot already had a pretty high arc. Now it looks like it's hitting like the upper bowl before it goes in.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but last year Donovan was actually a really good 3-point shooter in terms of just spot up shooting. Like he was a pretty, I think it was something around 40%. I could be wrong, but this year it's just not been the case. And so it was getting worrisome. And so that's been just like a welcome sight that Donovan is finally looking like Donovan from the last half of last year. And that's been really nice to see. And it's been nice to see Rudy kind of shine in these moments where, you know, the second unit is pretty rough sometimes, but when it's that starting unit in there and Donovan's in there, I think it just looks really good. And I think the main reason is because it's just a better chemistry for the team. I'm not the biggest Derek Favors fan, but I do think that they're getting by because they have Royce O'Neal on the floor who can shoot the ball. He had that game a few games ago where he shot like 12 threes, I think, and he made 5 of them. And that's perfect because that creates more spacing than Rubio, who they honestly don't really even guard when he's on the floor.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no question he's more of a threat from three than Rubio is.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about Royce in the starting lineup next to Mitchell is suddenly, I think you have a lot more switchability on defense. And that's when Utah's really dangerous as a defense, is when they have four guys who can switch everything and just allow Rudy to continue to stay around the rim. I think they wreak a ton of havoc on defense. And that obviously includes the Jay Crowder at the four element too. So that's another reason I'm kind of all over the place with this answer, but that's another reason I'm high on Exum, is because he may be listed as a point guard for the majority of his career, but he's like 6'6", 6'7". And so you can easily have him out there with Donovan Mitchell and let Donovan Mitchell control possessions the way he has been for the last week or so. And you just allow Exum to attack closeouts and then switch all over the place on defense. And it's just, it's so much more versatile than what they've been trotting out for the last two seasons.
Right. And when they had success last season, they were using Mitchell more as a one than Rubio as a one last year.
Yeah.
And Rubio was turned into an off-ball spot-up shooter. And he had success during that. And he had a terrible first half, and then Varian's, the cruel mistress as it is, went the other way. And he was hitting a high percentage of his shots. But the thing with Rubio is Rubio's not as good as his at the last end of the second half of last season. He's not as bad as he is in the first half of these seasons. But that middle section, that's not a player that you build around, and that's not a player who you can have championship teams around. Yeah. And I think whenever you say that on Twitter or I type it on SLC Dunk, I have a congregation of people being like, oh my gosh, you don't love the Jazz or you don't love Rubio. If you don't love Rubio, then I mean, how can you love Utah Jazz basketball? His passion and his great, and he has a lion tattoo. And he's a good player. It is a great tattoo. It's a fantastic tattoo. And he has a great look. He's by far like top five sexiest Jazz players, probably top one. I'll give him that. But built on, when you're looking at this team, you have Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, and you have to build around those strengths. And you have a primary slasher first in Mitchell. He can shoot, but it's kind of like Dwayne Wade. You really want him to attack the basket. You really want that more than anything because he's just such a great finisher around the rim. And so you need to give him that space. He deserves that space. So you want to build, you want to put players around him that are going to bend the defense, so he's not having to go in, having to drive into a defense that's fully set. And with Rubio, because Rubio's not a threat to take somebody off the dribble, like X him off his first step, nor is he able to shoot at all beyond the arc. And that's the thing, when people are like, well, look at his numbers. I'm like, you got to think that his numbers are with nobody guarding him. Normal players do not get the space to shoot threes that he does. And that's what he's shooting with, like a space that Kyle Korver has dreams about.
Mm-hmm. You want to hear a stat?
Yes.
Oh, geez. Yes, let's hear it.
I was looking this up while you were talking, and sorry to cut you off.
No. Listen, I want this more than anything.
He's taken 4,308 field goal attempts in his career. Okay. There are 604 players in the entire 3-point era, so since 1979, who've taken at least that many shots. Can you guys guess where he ranks in that 604? In effective field goal percentage?
I'm gonna guess 565.
Okay.
This is making us sound like we're just like complete sadists and pessimists. 601.
Ooh, very close, Milo. 602.
Well, who are the other two?
601 is Ron Mercer.
Hmm. Oh, geez, really?
Yeah. 602 is Ricky Rubio. 603, Eric Snow. 604, Brevin Knight.
Huh.
Oh, my. Brevin Knight?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Inject that saltiness into my veins. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
Your shooting percentage, I bet he'd go up a little bit just because he's always been such a good free throw shooter. But I feel
he doesn't get to the line. That's the thing. He doesn't get to the line like that. It doesn't make any sense. It's like putting Aquaman on Mars. It doesn't do you any good. You're just like, I can control water. Great. Can you breathe?
Yeah.
For true shooting percentage, he jumps up to 514, but you're point stands. He doesn't get to the line.
Yeah, that's
he doesn't get to the line.
Doesn't do it. Well,
yeah,
and when he does, and when he, that's the reason he's like, when people are like, wow, he's wide open on that layup, because no one is like, because he doesn't do it.
One thing I can assure,
like, if they leave the
one thing I can assure you is that when he comes back, he's starting no matter what. So like, I hope everyone's excited about that.
Dante Exum, I hate that you're right, but Dante Exum could be going like 25-5, and he's having like his Wally Pitt moment, and Quinn is going to be like, oh man, thank goodness we got Rubio back in this lineup.
You know,
it was complete pandemonium out there. It was hell.
I just It honestly, it's such a bummer to me. I saw that today and it honestly like ruined my day. I couldn't believe it. I don't know. I had hopes. It's one of those things. You had hope for an Xbox and your mom got you a Nintendo 64 and you're just like, oh man. But it'll be just okay.
Like, it's all sweet, a Sega Dreamcast.
But you know what? It is like we said, it's bittersweet because the Jazz are looking really good. Do you think I don't know.
But they have a rough stretch. Like they have Clippers, I think that's a loss just because the bench is just gonna go out there and just get just shellacked.
You know what? The Clippers lost the
Pistons. And then
we beat the Pistons. And
I know, but we always beat the Pistons. It's close games, but we always beat the Pistons.
You know, and it's like Derek Favors versus Montrezl Harrell a little bit, and I think actually that's a wash. I think Derek can handle him pretty well.
I know, but here's what's going to happen. Like, Tobias Harris's agent is going to be out there and be like, listen, the Jazz, this is a tryout. It's not, you don't have to play for them next season. But they're really going to push your number up there.
Well, and Rudy,
and we need
Rudy Boban, that's going to be a fun fight. But you know what? We don't have, Dante Exum to block Boban at the rim anymore. And so I don't know how we're going to be able to win this game.
I take this back. They got Boban out there as Clippers by 20.
I love him.
I absolutely love him. He is like the spiritual successor to Fisenko. Like Fisenko is like John the Baptist. He prepared the way for this man to be able to succeed.
Boban's only played 6 minutes in their last six games.
Really?
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm pretty first of all, there's no reason for Marcin Gortat to be playing anymore. He should be their starting center. This is another example of a coach who just has like a ceremonial starter for seemingly no reason. But play Harrell and give all the backup minutes to Boban. How can you deny Boban? It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, well, you got 10 to 15 minutes of Boban in second units. And
Where is he from? Serbian. Now I'm searching Serbian-Polish relations. Yeah. I just need to find out.
But yeah,
there's been anything going.
You're going to stats. I'm going to geopolitics. Okay, hold on.
Well, I just think
The kingdom. Okay, so diplomatic relations were established between the kingdom of the Serbs, the Croats, and the Slovenes in 1919. Okay, there's no really major war, so I can't really say this, but I can't say this like in full confidence. But I think there's something. That Doc Rivers has a secret deal with the Polish to keep Boban down. Okay, there we go. I'm glad I got that off my chest. Okay, continue on.
Montrezl Harrell's been, he's going to be sixth man of the year this year, probably. And he's made it so that DeAndre Jordan, losing DeAndre Jordan didn't even really matter. So I don't know.
No. I mean, gaining DeAndre Jordan didn't really matter for the Mavericks. Sorry, it didn't. Because he takes plays off.
Well,
for sure. For sure.
Let's see. So Rubio, Neto, Tabo possibly return after we play the Portland Trailblazers. We played Portland really well. It'll be interesting to see if the Jazz can actually win again against Portland. I mean, we haven't just beat Portland. We've destroyed Portland the last two times. We'll see if they can do it again. Rubio's going to come back. Do you guys think that his shooting will pick up when he comes back?
No.
I mean, if he follows
I don't.
He's been a lot better in second halves in the previous two seasons before this one, so the hope is that trend would continue. But there's just no way to know. Because
last year was a career year. You can't point to the anomaly and be like, this is normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is always what happens.
Yeah. It's just really hard to count on any level of consistency there.
My big question is, so we are coming up to a trade deadline. And I actually don't think there's really a lot out there the Jazz can do. I know there's players that a lot of Jazz fans talk about wanting, like Otto Porter. And some people had really, like, to me, just kind of wild hopes to get maybe Bradley Beal, which I don't think was ever a possibility at all.
at least with the Jazz's assets. But what is there anything the Jazz that they can do this upcoming trade deadline, you think, that, or maybe let's say I'll word this differently. How has like Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert's play during this latest hot streak? Do you think it's affected what the Jazz do in the trade deadline? Do you think the Jazz are making decisions based off of that, or has it just been like a really nice thing that's happened?
I feel like it may change the equation a little bit, just in the sense that you're starting to get more evidence that Mitchell can be the guy at like controlling possessions, kind of the way James Harden does. And so maybe you start to think, do we move on from Rubio now? Do we move on from him this summer? I mean, I'm sure the option of re-signing him is still on the table, but I do think that just having a little bit more data and evidence of what the team looks like with Mitchell in this role is a good thing. I don't know if it pushes the needle super far either way.
I think it changes the calculus like of what they do like maybe like 2 years from now. Like they're looking at this and they're like, okay, this is ahead a few miles down the road. But I don't think they may, if they do trade Rubio, I still think they're going to keep a traditional look, like they'll have a point guard or something else, because I think we talked about at the beginning of this podcast where the problem going on right now with Utah is they don't have a secondary playmaker. Without having that secondary playmaker, people who are not used to being in that playmaker role are having to step up. And I think moving Donovan Mitchell into that one kind of creates that issue right now.
You know what's weird about that, though? Do you remember when Quinn Snyder was first hired, how much he talked about positionless basketball? Mm-hmm.
Right. And now he's so – and now it's almost like he's like brought to its knees.
Yeah. It's just so weird.
It's so weird.
I remember those quotes very distinctly, and I even wrote about them for Bleacher Report a few times. That was back when they were having me write about the Jazz. And that was like one of the things that excited me most about that hire. It was like, and he was sort of ahead of the curve in that too.
Because he came from the Hawks, and he came from the Hawks that was doing that, where you had Paul Millsap initiating sets with Al Horford. And that's why they were able to blitzkrieg the East, because no one in the East was running anything like that. No one in the NBA was running anything like that.
And I still think they have a lot of guys who fit that. Like I talked about Exum earlier. I think he fits positionless basketball. I think Jake Potter fits it pretty well. I think Joe Ingles fits it really well. I think Mitchell can play a few positions. I wish they would just sort of go all in on that. I think the trade for Rubio probably delayed it a little bit, but I don't really see the need to delay it any further.
The trade for Rubio really put a wrench in that, and that was a total placate to Hayward. That feels, because that doesn't feel like what Dennis Lindsay wanted to do, but he's like, hey, if I have to sacrifice this to be able to have the as close to the team as we want, if I'm getting 90% of my vision versus 0% of my vision, okay, I can deal with that. But then once you were stuck with Rubio, and that's what it is, you were stuck with Rubio. That trade still burns me to this day, because
it wouldn't have happened.
Because Utah did everything right. Utah did everything right to try to get the free agent. That's also why I'm totally negative about any free agency. It's like Utah had a chance to sign a big time free agent and held all the cards and still lost. What are we supposed to do when we don't have the best hand at the table?
That's why
that's when we're supposed to get him.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm all in on a team like the Jazz has to. You have to make your big hits in the draft and through the trade market. I mean, free agency is just way too volatile for a team like Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, one of the things I've noticed too with Quinn Snyder, and I, and like you've been talking about, I've noticed Quinn Snyder really, really leans towards the players that play really well within his system. I think one of the things that I've really noticed that's kind of different than what we kind of thought is that, you know, we're going to adjust things based off of the strength of the players. And it does feel sometimes that we're trying to train players to fit within the scheme that we run. I do like that, you know, certain players seem to be able to really kind of flourish within that system, but you do have to have certain skill sets. I was going to say, I totally agree though with the positionless team. I do feel like Dennis Lindsay's been doing a pretty good job with a lot of these things, especially through the draft. He has found some nice pieces, and outside of the draft, like Royce O'Neal, who has struggled this year. He does look a little bit better recently. Last year, Royce O'Neal was a big piece, and he made it possible for the Jazz to trade Rodney Hood to get Jay Crowder, who's been really nice. The other player, and you mentioned him in passing a little bit before, I actually am a big fan of George Niang. He hasn't been able to hit a shot for like 2 months, but his ability to handle the ball.
Other than the fact that he can't hit this rod side of a barn, he's a really great player.
Here's my little prediction. I think he's going to be a big rotation piece next season. Because one of the things that I think he's quietly been a small part of our second unit, not completely like falling apart, because he's been a secondary ball handler for them. Against the Pistons, he brought the ball up.
He is a good player.
Well, he can handle the ball. He can run plays. He actually finishes at the rim pretty well. And he does look like kind of Joe Ingles light to me at times. And I think he's been kind of hit with the grind of the NBA a little bit. Cause this really is kind of like his rookie season.
Go ahead.
Say that again.
I'm pretty sure he's slower than Joe Ingles, as crazy as that is.
He's slower than Slow-Mo Joe. But
I want a foot race. I mean, it's like a speed walk at that point. But I
like George too, though. I think I've written at least one article about him since I came to SLC Dunk. I'm still like cautiously optimistic mm-hmm. about him.
I mean, we know that he can shoot. It's just a matter of him figuring it out. Maybe he never will, but if he can figure it out, then I think he becomes a really interesting, nice player, kind of another gem for Dennis Lindsay.
Any guesses on his nickname on Basketball Reference right now?
Have they updated it?
I never would have known this. I didn't know he had a nickname. But apparently he's the closer.
Hey, closing.
If I'm able to have my way, it will be the night of knee. If I can just get I'm working it into everything. And yeah. That's what's so frustrating about him not hitting shots is I have that when he checks in, I have that GIF. I have it on lock. I am ready. I have that in the chamber, just ready to go. All the Monty Python, beautiful, beautiful graphics, and he can't hit a shot, and it's just wasted. Like that's 100 RTs right there, easy money, and the guy cannot hit the shot. It makes me so mad. I think I
hear the S stands for shooting. That's what I hear, or scoring. I can't remember which one.
But 39% from three this season.
Is he still shooting 39%?
Yeah.
He is? How? Where?
Well, because he was shooting like 80% to begin the year.
Do they count pregame? Like what?
He's 20 for 52 overall. So it's a really small sample, but I still trust most of the 3-point attempts he puts up.
It's not like he has a broken shot. Trees. It's not like when you see like Rubio, like he loads up the trebuchet and you're like, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
It looks like a good shot. Go ahead.
I just said, I'm still in on George.
Me too. Okay. Big time George fan.
I'm not sure. I think it depends on the Jazz's off season. If it kind of depends, if they get a big name and they have to fill up with value, then George is in. If they miss out on a big name, then I think they're going to like, try to moneyball it, and we're going to have a lot of players trying to add up to one Tobias Harris.
Yeah.
And that's the hard thing. Like you said, I think there's a contract out there for Rubio, but it's the break in case of glass type of thing. It's if we couldn't get the player that we wanted at the trade deadline, or we couldn't get the player that we wanted to trade for, because Dennis Lindsay uses the draft more for trades than I think he does for actual draft picks. And so he leverages that for talent. He's done it with George Hill. He's done it with trading up for Donovan Mitchell. He rarely stands pat. And the years that he has stood pat at his draft pick, they haven't turned out great. You have Trey Lyles, and this year you have Grayson Allen. Sorry, it's just I'm not big on Grayson Allen. But when he's aggressive in there, like he is for Rudy Gobert, Howell Neto, Trey Burke was aggressive. It didn't work out, but I mean, the idea is there. He when he goes in with a mindset and is able to trade up, I think he does try to trade up for the player he wants every single time. It's just whether you get another team to want to be as dumb as Denver. That's really his best trades. Like his best trades, like do we think Dennis Lindsay is a great GM if Denver doesn't exist?
I'm sure he finds somebody
else. Without Denver, Dennis Lindsay's entire legacy is completely changed.
That's probably true. Yeah.
But I think like at this trade deadline, James was talking about before, there's not a lot of sellers out there. There's a grip ton of buyers. I would say there's 24 teams out there that think they legitimately have a shot at the playoffs. And there's only six teams that are like, F it, I'm done. And out of those six teams, they're so bad that you're like, what is there to be had from this? Like their young players are not giving up.
Well,
their veterans are, they're high profile veterans. Like you have Kevin Love, I think is the best high profile veteran out of all the tanking teams. And you have a big contract and injury issues with him that you have to worry about. You have Kent Bazemore, who is 2 years away from being a surprise and a great value pick, but then he got re-signed at a pretty big contract. You have Jeremy Lin, who is still like injury after injury after injury since Linsanity. And so you're like, and for the Utah Jazz, he's shooting about the same as Rubio. And gets to the line just a little bit more, but do you really want that? It's just
for some reason I thought Lin was shooting. I have a Jeremy Lin trade keyed up here.
Oh gosh.
Oh, can here I it hear is. It?
This it. Is from co-host of the Hardwood Knox podcast, Dan Favale.
Oh, that's a nice plug. I like what you did there.
Bleacher Report has him come up with, no joke, at least double digit fake trades per week. Like, it's a
Jeremy Lin.
Not all involving Jeremy Lin, fortunately.
Okay.
But he's just got to cook up so many fake trades. So I'm like in awe of how many realistic ones he churns out for them. But this is from a story that he wrote. It published on January 12th on Bleacher Report. It's a three-teamer. Uh-huh. So stay with me here.
Okay.
The Hawks receive Jan Mahinmi, a lottery-protected first from Utah, and that's it. The Jazz receive Jeremy Lin, Otto Porter, and Thomas Satoransky. And the Wizards receive Favors, Rubio, and Cephalosha. So,
well, I know Jazz fans would be excited about that. From
Utah's perspective, all it is you're switching Rubio for Lin, you're switching Porter for Favors, and you're switching Satoransky for Cephalosha. And I think I was going to say, I think you could argue all three of those swaps make sense for Utah.
Well, and if the Wizards start tanking, they get cap space.
Well, did you see that Atlanta beat the Thunder tonight? And I was just thinking,
Thunder are
like,
tanking.
You know, they traded.
Oh, no, that's not what you were thinking. Okay, sorry.
Well, you traded away Doncic so that you could be bad enough to get possibly Zion, and now you're beating the Thunder. That trade's starting to look so bad. And so maybe they do want someone like Rubio that they can just like release and get some cap relief. They need to lose games. And you know, Jeremy Lin's not he's not leading a team to the playoffs, but he's probably good enough to make you win a few more games than you probably wanted to.
And they get cap space because then they might be able to get into the KD market there. And especially if they could find a taker for John Wall, all of a sudden you're building around a draft pick and a free agent and Bradley Beal.
They'd still have to find somebody to take on John Wall, which is probably the hardest contract of all to deal. Maybe in the
when there's a Lakers, there's a way. I think the Lakers are going to go. My conspiracy theory is I think the Lakers end up with John Wall because I think they strike out in free agency because no one wants to sign a long-term deal to play with an aging LeBron.
That would be hilarious. And as John Wall and LeBron would not. That is a terrible match, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I know, but I mean, it's Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
It's Magic Johnson. We're not talking about like the heir apparent to Sam Presti in 2006. We're talking about Magic Johnson.
No, you're not about that.
Like, I'm sorry. I don't think when there's the Lakers or the Knicks, there's a way. And I also think the Knicks could be one of those teams that strikes out and is like, we got to be relevant. And they get like John Wall to be with like Porzingis. And they maybe like get the 8 seed barely. And they just repeat like the greatness of Melo's years.
I wouldn't put it past the Suns.
Well,
I think the Suns.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I wouldn't put it past the Suns either. I think that's maybe another team that's crazy enough to go after.
Oh, they could do it too. They could do it and afford to.
Yeah. Like it.
Because they'll just fire their GM, not blame their owner, and just do the whole thing over again. They got it. I mean, it's in their manual.
Run it
at
back.
This point. It's this is what they do every year. It's just like, we gave it a shot, but man, there's this bum GM.
Do you guys think there's going to be a trade for the Jazz? Do you think the Jazz make a trade this before trade deadline?
I think they want to. I don't think they. I think the Wizards should blow it up. I don't think they will because it's the Wizards.
Yeah, they're not smart.
I don't know. They're the dude. They're the Black Knight that has all his limbs cut off, and they still think they got a shot. Like they're just gonna keep on coming at you, bleeding all over you. They don't see it. And that's the thing. Like even teams that, for example, I think Memphis is starting to see in their own mortality, but I don't think anybody wants to deal with them. I think Dallas is seeing their own mortality as the real playoff teams are starting to trend up and it's like you can only catch people by surprise. And I think that's what's happening with Dallas. Dallas caught a lot of people by surprise. And now people are treating them like a playoff contender and things are getting rough. New Orleans, I think you can only ask Anthony Davis to do so much, and they're not going to trade Anthony Davis until draft time when they know they're trading for like maybe a guaranteed number two with a team or whatever.
I think the Jazz are actually going to make a trade. Oh. I think the Jazz are going to surprise people. I think something's going to happen because like you said before, I don't think there's a huge trade market out there. So I wonder if the Jazz are willing to
like pay a premium, like they're willing to, because I think that's what you have to do. Like if you're going to get a team that doesn't think they want to make a trade, you're going to have to pay the difference in opportunity costs and draft picks. You're going to have to make them give up their dream in draft picks.
Well, that's the thing, is like, you're not getting anyone in the draft anymore because Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell are too good. Yeah. Free agency. There's like, I have my favorite player that if the Jazz had a chance, I honestly think if the Jazz could get Tobias Harris, I think that makes them good enough to contend to get to the finals. I think that's a good team. But I just don't think the Jazz can get him. He's, you know, he's already on a winning team right now. He gets to be the guy. I believe the Clippers can offer him more money than we can. You know, even if the Clippers start losing and fall out of the playoffs, he's still probably going to be like, you know what? I can still get more money here. I get to live in LA, and they probably will get someone nice who wants to live in LA with me. And so I just think the Jazz are going to go after somebody. I think we're going to get surprised by something. I don't know if it's going to be a surprise that everyone goes, oh, wow, I didn't know they could, you know, get that. I think it's going to be a guy that I think some Jazz fans might, you know, kind of have some misconception. I don't know if misconception is the word, but just some, like, I think the Jazz might go after someone like Kevin Love. And I know I've been, and, you know, people get angry at me on Twitter for mentioning that. But I just think a guy like that can come to the Jazz and be kind of a third or fourth option. And, you know, whatever player the Jazz are going to get, it's probably going to be someone with a contract that we're not, you know, excited about. Those are the types of players you can actually go out and get in the trade.
Did you guys hear that?
What was that? What was that?
City is my favorite place in the U.S.
Saying Park City is my favorite place in the U.S. saved on my computer.
I think the thing that people have to do is, like, there's the expectations. It's like the 500 days of summer. Like, you have an idea, like, you have this expectation of what you want Utah to do during the trade deadline, but then there's the actual reality of what they're able to do. And I think they're going into it being like, we're going to get Tobias Harris or Otto Porter. And I think the reality is those guys aren't available, and the guy who's available is Kevin Love.
Yeah.
And
Kevin Love.
And that's what you have to do with Utah. Like, you play in Utah. And so if you get, like, Utah is extremely lucky to have basically, I would say, a top 10 guy in Rudy Gobert and a fringe top 20, 25 player in Donovan Mitchell. And so you have that nucleus, but because you are in Utah, you're not going to be afforded the luxury of getting another top 25 guy via free agency.
Yeah, you had to get through the draft.
Exactly. And so if you can get a top 35 guy, that's a coup. It doesn't matter who they are. And so you look at Kevin Love, and he can be a top 35 player in the NBA for the next two seasons. And if you can get a top 35 guy to pair with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert during this time for the next two seasons, and when people are like, oh, but what do you do afterwards? You trade him. You figure it out. Whether you have to give up a first rounder to get rid of it, you trade him.
Yeah.
But you can figure that out. It's like the thing that bothers me is like, well, what do you do when he's not valuable? You move him like any normal team. It's not like you're chained to it and you sign some contract being like, yeah, thou shalt never trade Kevin Love again, nor stretch his contract out or release him. Like, you move on from it. But you have to capitalize on the opportunity that you have now.
I have two selling points that I'll give on Kevin Love. One, I really love what Kyle Korver has done for the Utah Jazz, and he's 37 and he's doing really great things. And two, I think the Jazz are really good. And this is kind of a two-part thing. They do a good job of managing minutes. They wouldn't play Kevin Love, I think, more than what he should be playing if he was on the Jazz. Mm-hmm. I think the new Jazz health team has done an amazing job with Derek Favors. It wasn't like, honestly, two seasons ago, I wasn't sure if Derek Favors was even going to be in the NBA that much longer because of all these knee problems, and just felt like he could never play. And the Jazz have figured it out with him. And I think the Jazz have a really nice health team that I think can do a really good job of keeping him healthy. At least you hope so. We haven't really been able to keep Exum all that healthy, but maybe we can do it with Kevin Love.
Yeah, it's just you have to roll the dice. You kind of have to roll the dice with these guys. You know, that's what's going to happen with Utah. So, I mean, when you're a small market team, you have to do it. And if it hits, it hits. If not, it doesn't work out. But that's unfortunately a small market team. It's not like an LA Lakers that can totally botch and come underprepared to free agency. and land LeBron.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm sorry. They were the dude who showed up with like without reading the book and gave like a book report in class. Like, you're like, oh yeah, Tale of Two Cities. It was, you know, Los Angeles and New York. Love Charles Dickens. And they landed LeBron.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have other teams that are showing up with like amazing presentations or bringing in like the royalty of the city and all of that BS. And LeBron's like, no, I'm good. Like it.
Being small.
Yes. And that's just, Utah doesn't have it. Utah doesn't have a beach. They don't have, it's not warm there. It's Utah. I'm sorry.
Well, I think this last, and I know we're kind of running out of time, but I think this last week and a half shows you that if you trade for Kevin Love, that might be a good idea, because Donovan Mitchell, I think, is showing that he can kind of be the lead guy of a winning basketball team. And Kevin Love doesn't have to be the lead guy. Kevin Love can be option number three. And I think actually this week, Donovan Mitchell has shown enough that the Jazz maybe can make a move. I don't know if you guys heard.
This is the week Rudy Donovan Gobert Mitchell became president.
President.
I really think so. I really think this is the week. I mean, there's been a lot of times before this, but I really think this is the week he became president.
Well, Rudy Gobert was on Chris Haynes' podcast. I don't know if you guys listened to it.
I haven't got a chance to listen to it yet.
Really good, but one of the things he does mention is he wants to win a championship, and I think Rudy appreciates the Jazz making moves to win.
Yeah, he said.
Oh, that's foreshadowing.
He said that would be his primary motivation. He also said, I could see myself playing my whole career here, which was cool, but ultimately my decision's going to be it'll always be about the organization that gives me the best chance to win. I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. We're already the minute I hear that, I just feel like the clock has been reset. It's just with a different player now.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, when's this contract up? We got this long. Let's not just like try to cram for the test and get a Rubio at the last second to try to appease this time. Can we do a little bit more?
I have way more faith in Gobert, though. I think it helps.
I do too.
I think it helps when players are not from America, because
he communicates really well. I think he communicates and he's very blunt versus like, I don't think he can hide his intentions and what he wants. What? So I think even if he's not going to come back, I think Utah's going to have a good sense of that rather than, is he? Is he not? Is he going to be?
Well, part of what I meant too is it feels like a lot of guys who come from overseas, it's like the big market is just being in America for them. Where
that's true.
A guy who grew up in America, I think he's more familiar with the lore of the Lakers or the Knicks or the Celtics or whatever other big franchise there is. But for a guy like Gianni Antetokounmpo, he just loves Milwaukee because that's his introduction to America. And I think there's maybe a hint of that with Gobert and some of the other guys, like Dirk Nowitzki he just loves Dallas. I would hope that Rudy plays his entire career for the Jazz and retires as one of the greatest defensive players of all time and has a couple championships with Utah. But, like you said,
the only way I could see them losing him is if they had a franchise open up in Las Vegas.
Well, the one thing I think about Rudy, too, is Rudy comes across as really genuine and he seems like a really loyal guy. And I think Rudy does appreciate that Jazz traded up to get him. And I kind of feel like that message was Rudy appreciates the Jazz not tanking. Like Rudy wants to win games. And I think that is like a little bit of a message from Rudy to Utah to say, hey, I want to win. I don't want to, you know, wait another thing to see if maybe we can get a guy in the free agency. And then if we strike out, we just go out and get, you know, three.
Like walk it back all over again. We guarantee Favors contract, re-sign Rubio, and then tread water for 82 games.
You know, pick up players kind of like Cabo and Jonas Jerebko and stuff. That's, you know, those are nice players, but you can get a nice third option this off. And, you know, and that's why I was messaging the SLC Dunk group. I just was thinking about, you know, well, who else? Maybe if the Grizzlies decide to tank, maybe Mike Conley is someone you think about.
or something, just a player that might be actually possible. I just think that's the thing Jazz fans need to remember, is there's a difference between, you know, a really like what you can actually get and what you want to get sometimes. Like no one's disagreeing that Kevin Love doesn't have an injury history. Like, he's injured right now as we speak, but when he's healthy, he's been a player that's contributed to a championship team. And I don't know. I think Rudy sees that too. And by making moves like that, it is nice. It is a nice message to send to players. I mean, Gordon Hayward, that guy held on to grudges for things the Jazz did for a long time. And I think the Jazz have done right by Rudy for the most part, his whole career. And I think doing something can send nice messages to him, I think.
Yeah, I'm optimistic. He'll be with the Jazz for a long time.
Yeah, and the good news is too. I think a lot of people, and maybe sometimes myself included, because I lived in Indiana and saw like the rise and fall of the Pacers, and saw Roy Hibbert change the league defensively, and then it was just like the league changed and left him behind. It wasn't that Roy Hibbert suddenly became bad by any means or anything. I think just the league changed. And so I look at my always ever growing fear in the back of my head, and I don't feel that way anymore, just because the way Rudy Gobert, he's guarding the perimeter a lot more this season, and it looks like his game is going to be able to adapt defensively to what this new offense is doing. At the beginning of the season, it was kind of like giving you the worries of like, is freedom of the movement? Are we going to be doing a 30 for 30 on this years from now and being like, freedom of movement, man? Rudy Gobert was the most amazing thing. And then you couldn't touch a guy. But now you can, he's playing more on the perimeter. He's playing more out there, and he's still having the same impact of shrinking the floor. So I think the Utah Jazz are set up, and then they have Donovan Mitchell for, you know, his rookie contract. And then dude's going to get a max extension, and he's probably going to get that the heavy, heavy max extension because of it. So right now, I think, is the biggest time that Utah has Donovan Mitchell not yet in his prime. They have Rudy Gobert in his prime, and now's a chance where you can take a shot at a third option, and it's not going to kill your salary cap too much, because you have Donovan Mitchell on a rookie contract. You got to go. Yeah. You got to go for it.
Now is the time to take a swing. I agree.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's all the time we have, but it's been a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us, Andy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's been great.
Awesome.
And just a reminder, guys, to go look up Hardwood Knox on iTunes and wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can listen to more Andy Bailey and Dan Favalli. I listen to it, and it's great. And you guys should go do that too right now. And then after you do that, go subscribe to the SLC Punks podcast. Leave a review. We really appreciate it. You can say whatever you want. We stopped reading the reviews at the beginning, Milo. I think we're still going to do that once in a while, because I think it's funny. But
one star. Anyway, we appreciate this had no punks.
One star. But anyways, guys, like and subscribe this. We will talk to you later.
Peace, y'all.